Welcome to the Art Show this Sunday, and a lovely Sunday it is, on WRFM.ie. Myself, Breida Burns, and Grainne O'Reilly. And we'll play our first tune before we introduce our guest for today, Elvis, Return to Sender.
I gave a letter to the postman. He put it in his sack. Bright and early next morning, he brought my letter back. She wrote upon it, "Return the sender. Address unknown. No such number. No such song. We have dropped it in the mailbox as in a special deed. Bright and early next morning, it came right back to me. She wrote upon it, return the sender, address unknown. No such person.
I am here on the desk, which is not my favourite place to be, but I am. Is that coming out okay? Now, our first guest today is Nicky O'Dowd. Now, some of you might have met Nicky. She was in the Plaza last year as part of the Arts Festival. So you're very welcome, Nicky.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
Now, before we talk to you about what you're doing, you were going to talk to us about the next song. Marvelettes, Please Mr. Postman.
Well, it was actually just to go back onto Return to Sender as well. I mean, all of these have got letter links, which is, you know, about my project and post. But the thing about the Return to Sender is obviously Elvis, 1962. It was actually the very first number one for Ireland. And Ireland had its charts, started its charts in that year that Return to Sender was released by Elvis. So it was the very first number one in Ireland, but also in, I think it was 1990 or something, America did a commemorative stamp for Elvis. And, of course, it was very popular and everything. And lots of people then started to write fictitious addresses so that they would get that Return to Sender stamp on the envelope with the Elvis. And if you could get a first day issue of the Elvis stamp with Return to Sender, and then all the United States, you know, postal services copped on, and they were just inundated with thousands
really?
And thousands of people trying to get the stamp for Return to Sender back. So I thought that was really nice.
And they'd be scratching their heads trying to figure out the reader.
Yeah.
Postcodes, which I think the postmen here are great. Like, they don't need postcodes. They're brilliant.
I know. Fantastic. Oh, yeah, they're a different breed altogether, aren't they? The next one, Please, Mr. Postman, of course, is for anybody who is waiting for a letter. And I don't know what your service is like now, but I know there used to be a morning delivery and an afternoon delivery. So, you know, that expectation of waiting for the postman to come, you always knew what time around he was going to come. And I know it's not there. But maybe it'll come in the next post, you know. And so I chose this one particularly. And the Marvelettes version, I think, the Beatles did one and the Carpenters did one, whatever. But Marvin Gaye's on drums on this one.
Marvin Gaye on drums?
Yeah.
I never knew that he played the drums.
Well, there you go.
Okay, here we are. Please, Mr. Postman.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Well, I'm back in my spot, Breeder. You can relax now. It's such a
I get a little bit nervy when Gráinne is not here. I've got headphones and a mic and you're not to touch the return button.
Well, it's such a lovely day out and there's actually quite a lot of traffic in town. I don't know if it's because it's nice weather, Mother's Day, the end of Mass, and there's a funeral on too.
Well, that's a cue for like all the mothers out there. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
Yes. Thank you, Breeder. Our guest today, Nikki Dowd, from me. I know Breeder welcomed you already, but you're very welcome from
me. Thank you. Oh, so far Gráinne was introduced the song, so we haven't talked about... If you see the links there already, it's about Post. So you do a project on Post, a film by Nikki Dowd. You might tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, I started it... I'm embarrassed to say about 10 years ago. Really, it was one of those things that was a bit of an itch in my head that I needed to scratch, and it was inspired by my mother-in-law back in Birmingham, who was actually from Skibbereen, and she left Skibbereen when she was 16. She had to. It was what they used to call active recruitment, and she went over to the NHS and with very, very little education, as was so common. And not a lot of big... celebrations when she left. She had to go, as so many had to go. And I always thought, God, that must have been so difficult when she was so young. She'd probably never even been further than a mile from her own home. And then to sort of get a bus and a train and a boat and then land in a big city and not know where she was going or what she was doing. Anyway, she used to tell me how important the letters were that kept her connected with home. And she very often looked after the kids for me when I was working. And I'd come through the door and she'd say, "Will you have a cup of tea?" You know, which was always the metaphor for, "Have you got time for a chat?" You know, so we'd sit and she'd just reel off all these wonderful stories about the letters that came and how she felt and the news and how they used to share them with her other Irish nursing friends, and they'd all sit and read each other's letters, you know, and look at the postmark and where it was from when it landed in their little boxes in the nursing thing. And the more people I spoke to about that, the more I realised, God, letter writing for the diaspora of the Irish who really did travel wherever, you know, Australia, America, New Zealand, they were dispersed as a culture that just, you know...
Yeah, I think Marion Fanuka was saying this morning, I was listening before coming in, that there's more Irish, somebody, there's a guest of hers, there's more people that can claim Irish passports in England at the moment than there's living in Ireland.
Really?
Yeah, it's one of the statistics there that we're talking about there's a lot at the moment because the president's going to do the first official state visit to England. So in that context, there's a lot of that
movement
at the minute.
Yeah, I always think of that as actually funny that, you know, the island and the island and that, you know, the transportation of the different bodies that, you know, no one will ever think because there's always some going and some coming, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, the letters then, I appealed in the Mayo News and the Roscommon Herald, and then I went on Castle Bar Radio. I'd just written a comedy play, and so at the end of the comedy play, I asked for people to send me their letters and their stamps, and I did it in England as well and BBC Radio, and people started to send me their letters and their stamps. And sometimes they were anonymous and sometimes they had a little note with them. But, you know, I'd get things like a packet of 40 stamps from Argentina and they'd be like 1870 onwards. I think
Would that have been the Foxford links? Like, there's a lot of links between Foxford and Argentina.
Well, I mean, I just found out that there was an Irishman developed the submarine in Argentina. There was massive recruitment by the Argentinians for the Irish to go and look after their farms and to rear bulls, their meat. I have to say, from what I've read as well, you know, it was pretty disastrous, the Argentinians. The Irish really got stitched up there. They were promised, you know, homes and a living and everything, and an awful lot died on the way. But then the other thing that I discovered was where there was a tunnel, and you looked on the labour list like Sydney Tunnel and the Harbour Bridge and everything, and you'd look and see what percentage were Irish. All the tunnellers were from Donegal. So
they were trying to tunnel out of Donegal.
So I'm not a historian. Building up this picture. So anyway, Eugene's mum said to me that, you know, that the letters were always...
Eugene being the better half.
Eugene being the better half, of course. He said, you know, that everybody used to read the letters with this cup of tea. And his mum actually said that she had to earn the letter. So when the postman arrived, she'd run and go and have a look and see who it was from. You know, they'd look at the stamp. Which, of course, the stamp is its own little piece of history, you know, telling you what date and age and who lives there and the flora and fauna and those, you know, beautifully designed things. And then she would do the chickens, air the beds, mop the floor, put the kettle on the range. And she sort of like would then hold a letter, say the rosary and have a cup of tea. And that whole theatre, this ritual of sort of earning the letter, sort of really got to me. So I covered a teapot. It started with the teapot, covered the teapot in the stamps. And then I thought, I actually need to do a tea set. So then I did a tea set, and then I found this lovely kettle that my grandma's. I thought, I'll do the kettle. And then I had a tea set and a kettle, and then I thought, Jesus, it needs a chair to sit on. And there's a pub in Birmingham called the Old Crown in Digbeth. It's in the Irish community area. And again, Eugene's father, Joe Dowd, who's from Ballyhadreen, actually, he said that in the 1950s and the 60s, they used that pub as their digs, and it was a postal address. So they'd stand outside with maybe 3 donkey jackets on so that they looked really good and healthy and fit and big and strong. And then people like Wimpy and McAlpine and all those big construction companies would come past and say, yeah, we'll have you. And then they'd take them off in a truck and they'd go and do Spaghetti Junction or the Birmingham Airport.
The other lads would turn their back and go the opposite direction.
Yeah. And they'd be there with the wellies and the hat, and then they'd be dropped back. And the letters would arrive at the pub, and there might not be that many that could read. So they'd go and sit at the back, have their Guinness and their meal for the night, and then one of them would read the letter to everybody. And I just thought, oh my God. So the guy who sadly has died now, Anthony Hickey, he actually said, take this chair. This is the oldest chair in the pub.
Oh,
I know
nice.
That this is where the Irish have sat on. So the chair in itself, before I even covered it in the stamps, I always thought, gee, if you could speak. You know, there's a very strong, calmer warmth coming from these artifacts. And then, of course, I've got the chair, so then I needed a table. So, you know, to make it complete. And the last sort of, like, time I was in Westport, so I don't know, I suppose we're going back now a year or so, I went hunting around for an old table, and there was a Yorkshire couple, actually, that ran the Gaiety before the American took it over, and I went in and asked there, and they went, oh, yeah, we've got one for you, or it come from a burnt-out cottage in Kilchimar. That's got a story for you, I tell you. No. And it was fabulous, and it was thick with black, treacly smoke, and it was covered in worm. And so that has now got 3,500 stamps from people who've travelled all over the world. And
do you mind me asking, like, when we were children, it was always a big thing, if a letter came from anywhere, we were required to tear off that corner with the stamp on it and bring it in. And I don't want to say what charity it was for, but all school children brought the stamps into school, and I really don't know what happened to them after that. Where did you get your stamps?
I've forgotten that, Grania. Because that means a lot of people wouldn't have stamps because they were given them
Because we all collected the stamps, put them in an envelope, and when we had an envelope full, we brought them into school.
Well, that's amazing you said that, because I was at Carraholly School yesterday, and there's a box by their photocopier saying, please put your stamps
in here.
Yeah. I asked people to send me their letters or their stamps from their letters, and that's what people sent, and they were all torn off from the envelopes. Sometimes they'd send me the whole envelope, and sometimes they sent me photocopies of the letters or letters, and then I photocopied them and sent them back. So it was really, I appealed, and this is something that I really want people to do, to go and look for those letters, because if they've travelled to Australia or New Zealand or whatever, very often they've moved around so much, those letters have gone. But if they've stayed in one place a little bit and settled, somebody will suddenly say, Jesus, I've got those letters somewhere, I'll go and help them out. And then they're getting new life, because then they're reading them again and sharing all that history with their family. And, you know, some of the things that were in the letter, somebody sent me 27 postcards, Irish postcards from 1920s onwards, and one of them, it just says, sorry I didn't see you at mass today, the children have got chicken pox. It was their text.
Yeah. Didn't you get a letter once, Breda?
Breda Artis Mayo.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. And that's fine for you.
My mother, God rest her, was around at the time, and Mammy said, you didn't read that envelope. I said, I did. That was your fear. If somebody says you didn't, your first reaction is, I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless what the...
Yeah, absolutely, black
and white.
She
did not. What was the dress? And then I read it, because she picked it up first. So that was like, and I checked then the date. It actually was in time.
Yeah.
There was no delay. But because of that, like, and another nice story, and we said it before, our friend Camillus Comiskey, better known as Cosmo, and he really likes the idea of just keeping the old addresses rather than post. Yeah. He got one once, Cosmo. I don't know if it was Westport or where, but it came really smartly anyway. I won out the letter of the week because he put in the Mayo News one time. But my favourite story, can I tell it? Am I changing? There was a guy one time, and he's kind of a German name, and the address was like 21 Ireland. And see me, the lads in Dublin spent ages trying to figure it out.
Right.
Guess where it might be, Grania?
Where?
Pontoon.
Okay.
The card game Pontoon and the card game 21 are kind of the one thing. And whoever was writing the letter in their head that delivered the card game, that must be 21, put it down. The lads found the guy up at Pontoon that owned the letter, yeah.
That's a great story.
And I heard that via somebody who used to work in the Mail in Dublin, so it was an accurate...
Well, Eugene's father's in Ballyhadrine, and his address is one long Ballyhadrine. And I always just thought, I can't believe that that's...
One long.
Yeah, because of the river.
It's the river called Long.
Yeah. So, anyway,
I didn't know that.
Sorry, but you know.
Ballyhadrine is kind of like a word of part.
And you said Long, you see, I thought it was Long, so there you go, you know. But anyway, then, they have six letters that have come from to and from America. And this goes, it's 1960, so I always think of that as not that long ago. And it starts off with, you know, we got a good price for the heifer and, you know, the carrots are good and your dad's just made a pair of trousers for somebody and they've got a bit more money. And, you know, and then the next one is so-and-so's got married and so-and-so's made their first Holy Communion and the next one also had a baby. And I've cut my finger on the chicken shed and I'm really cross and I can't do the digging. And then the next one is, you know, I'm not feeling too good. And the next one is, would you ever come home? And the next one, it's not her handwriting.
Oh, yeah.
It's the father's. And she died from septicemia from cutting her finger on the chicken shed.
God, that's terrible sad.
Yeah.
And do you have those stamps?
I do.
Are they in a teacup?
No, they're on the,
table. Yeah. Let's have a song. How about this one? This is a part of your selection. Glen Campbell, By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
This is the killer.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note I left hanging on her door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving, 'cause I've left that girl so many times before. By the time I make Albuquerque, she'll be working. She'll probably stop at lunch and give me a call. But she'll just hear that phone keep on ringing off the wall. That's all. By the time I make Oklahoma, she'll be sleeping. She'll turn softly, call my name out low, and she'll cry just to think I'd really leave her. Though time and time I've tried to tell her so, she just didn't know I would really go.
We're here with Nikki O'Dowd, who's telling us all about her project, about the stamps. Nikki, you might, just for people who are interested, might want to look up what you do. Have you a website?
I do, yeah. www.nikkidowd, D-O-W-D, .co.uk.
You might just spell the Nikki bit as well. Just
N-I-C-K-Y-D-O-W-D. So it's www.nikkidowd.co.uk. And then when you look on that, I mean, it is like a complete smorgasbord of the capers I get involved with, but then you just click on the and post part, and you can see then photographs of the installation, and you can also link to the documentary where I've interviewed some people in Birmingham, the Irish that settled in Birmingham and worked there, and they tell their stories about receiving and writing letters back home.
So did you get this project from On Post?
No.
Was it a commission, or you just went about it yourself?
Yeah, I actually called it Irish Post originally. And actually the Irish Post newspaper helped me a lot in appeals. And then it was suggested to me that I use the Gaelic. And I wasn't actually thinking of An Post, the postal service, at that time. And I just thought, yeah, let's call it An Post, because also in England it makes people actually question what it is, and then I can say, oh, well, it's, you know, it is the Irish Postal Service, but no, it's, you know, it's the Gaelic. I would dearly like them to sponsor me and help me do the next film.
I presume they're aware of it.
Oh, they are, yeah. Yes, they are aware of it, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And they haven't said, give us back our name or anything?
No, because actually I've started to film a little bit for the second documentary with me arriving in Jerry from the Westport Post Office helped me and gave me one of his lovely postman and a van. And I filmed myself arriving in Westport with the installation in the van and taking it out and taking it into the plaza. So I want to do, to involve that in the next documentary.
So tell us about the film, Nikki.
The one that's been done at the moment, I mean, I see this as a series. It's interviewing people in Birmingham, as I said, about the letters that they wrote and how they felt when those letters arrived and how they shared the news from the letters. The anxiety about waiting for that letter to arrive, and it's a very emotive subject, and the people who I talk to, you know, get very emotional. I mean, the Irish are such great storytellers and orators, but I have got sort of like 3 hours of stories and I could only use 10 minutes because it related to the letters. But there was some...
Like, I was going to ask you that, like, is there a lot of editing or how do you work that?
Well, yes, and I haven't made a movie before, so, you know, it was... normally you would do a storyboard and plan what you were going to do, but I didn't know what material I was going to have until I met these people and they gave me a story, and then as soon as they gave me the story, then in my head I could see how I wanted to glue it all together, because the other thing that kept on coming up was people, the Irish, sending money and letters home, and clothes home back to Ireland, and they'd get turkeys. And so many people told me about turkeys arriving. So that's what came from Ireland back to England or whatever, these turkeys in the post.
Okay.
So many people told me that story.
I wouldn't be aware of that, would you,
Granny? I didn't even know you could post a turkey.
Yeah.
Well, it's in the film.
Something I'd even think of.
It's in the film, and I can remember, I was only maybe 17 at the time, this turkey coming in the post to Eugene's, and it was like a cartoon, you know, with its just like eggs at four corners with all the blood and the guts and about 52 stamps all stamped on it, and it would all be smelling a bit or whatever. But see, look at the film, because people mention the importance of the turkeys coming back to England. It's very simple. And again, somebody flagged up Kilkelly Island.
Our listeners, like, don't try this at home.
yeah.
I wouldn't think it'd be recommended today.
I know. Kilkelly Island, the song.
Oh, that's a lovely song.
Yeah.
Have you heard Pat Egan's version of that?
No.
Pat Egan, I think he sings that on one of Matt Malloy's CD, Music of Matt Malloy's.
But again,
it's a beautiful song.
Based on original letters from 1860 to 1890.
My dear and loving son John.
Son John, yeah. And Pat McNamara was the school teacher who wrote them.
Yeah.
For them, because they couldn't write and read them.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's absolutely crippling, but that is actually edited into my film, this one. But the second, what I'm doing now is I've realised now I need to tell the story from this side. I need to find people, and you know, I'd like to appeal to your listeners here that would help me with my research, because as we know, they're a dying breed. You know, the people who wrote those letters and have got the stories, the ones that were left behind. I'd like to contact people whose brothers and sisters, siblings went to America, went to Australia, went to England, and how they felt. Did they feel abandoned? Were they a little bit angry? Did they inherit the farm? Did they want the farm? Did they inherit the shop? You know, was it the youngest or the eldest? Because that seemed to change, didn't it? You know, the eldest either inherited or the youngest inherited. But, you know, how they felt about, was there no choice that they had to look after mum and dad? And so I really need to document the ones that stayed and received the letters and how they felt when they received the letters and writing back and tell this side of the story. And then hopefully maybe get to America. And the third series would be the ones that went so far away and they couldn't get back, you know, and it was a long, long way for them to get back.
And are you funding this project yourself?
I am. Yeah, I am.
You obviously enjoy it. Because I met you last year when you were up in the plaza. You seemed to get a kick out of it.
Well, I thought it was just something I was interested in. It was just something I liked doing in between other jobs and things at home and life getting in the way. And the more people I spoke to, particularly the elderly, the stories were just so interesting and harrowing, but I just felt there was such an importance in documenting them and paying respect to them and that what we could learn from it. And of course we don't write letters anymore, so I write
them and they end up in the bottom drawer. It metaphorically, they're not in an actual drawer, but like I write them, but that's as far as they go.
It's
a type of therapy, is it, Brita?
Well, it could be.
Let's have another song. Here's Stevie Wonder, Signed, Sealed, Delivered. You're listening to The Arts Show here on WRFM.ie with me, Gráinne O'Reilly, and Breda Burns. If you'd like to contact us, you can email studio@WRFM.ie or text the word studio followed by a message to 51444.
And just like, can I just totally on that, Gráinne? Some people do say sometimes it's hard to get the station, but if any of your friends are interested in it and they can't tune in to 98.2 FM, if you go into WRFM.ie and just hit listen live, you can get the show. So, like, if you're passing that, you just wanted to say that.
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Now, Nikki, you were going to say, there was something you...
Yeah, it's just something that you were just saying there, that you say that you tend to start to write a letter, but it never makes it to the postbox. So, I mean, that I think is really interesting, because there were times, and I'm sure everybody relates to this, where you write a bit and then something happens and off you go and you do your shopping, or you go and pick up the kids or whatever, and or whatever it needs to be done, and then you come back and then it could be a week later and you see this little paragraph and then you can't find the pen. So then it's a different colour
pen.
And
then the story's irrelevant.
And then it's irrelevant, it's too late. But then, you know, if that does ever get out, it could be four paragraphs, all different handwriting, because you're in a different mood. It's dark, it's like you're cross, you're angry, you're happy, you're, you know, different pens, broken, they run out, you know, inevitably something runs out. So when that other person receives it, it's such a window into your life. Never mind the content. It's like,
a window into the madness. Madness. Could be some of
the hectic schedule that you're, you know, pursuing at the time. And that is something that I feel really strongly about in relation to if you compare it with an email. Now, of course, I think it's fantastic, the digital era, that it's making so everything so immediate. But your handwriting is as personal as your thumbprint. And when you get a letter that it's so tactile, it's so, I don't know, just the word envelope, it envelops a story hidden within.
She's taught about this.
Yeah, it's just, well, I mean, I don't know what the origin of history is, but I always think of his story, you know, because I've been doing this, and I was just thinking... it's like opening a parcel, isn't it? The anticipation of, whereas in an email, it's there. The unless you're going to use a different typeface, it's the same. If you emailed me, Gráinne emailed me, somebody else, it's just generic.
Yes,
really.
Yes.
It doesn't have that personal. And then, of course, you read it and delete it or file it away forever. But
yeah, somebody said to me recently, why is all the words like on phones and on things delete? Because it's a negative word. This person, whether they like them or not, hates actually using that word delete. Because it feels, and I understand that, like,
it's too harsh,
because you can do something annoys you, you actually are constantly deleting.
Yes.
But you do that same delete for something you like.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you can't keep everything on your...
Yeah. Well, my mum's 80, and my dad bought her a laptop for Christmas, and I'm immensely proud of her learning how to email and attach photographs and stuff, and she's sending it to the grandchildren, and there's this like lovely, you know, communication going back and forth. But it occurred to me that even when I got an email from a mum, it was like, oh great, that's from mum, and it's really chatty and funny and it's lovely, but I read it and delete it. Now if she'd have sent me a letter, there is absolutely no way I'd have thrown that letter away. It would have gone in a novel or a recipe book or in between the records, or I don't know. But it just would not, I would not have thrown it away. And I have lots of letters from families all around the world, you know, that I still
look
at them.
Where would you think, maybe printing the odd one?
Well, I don't know. It's just something, it's not very nice to look at because it's just so hard. Mm. I don't know. It's definitely different. And the language, I don't know, it really concerns me that... I know how lazy I'm getting with spelling. I mean, my handwriting is atrocious now.
Yeah, texting really...
It's terrible.
Even if you start with a bad place, you get into a worse place.
But you know how you used to sort of like, oh, it's the two M's in swimming, I'm not sure, and then
you scribble
it.
It's so hard to write Y-O-U when you're used to writing you, the letter.
You just get lazy. But my confidence has gone.
Do you know what I found? I found the muscles in my right hand that I used for writing aren't as good as they used to be.
There you go.
Yeah, my hand gets sore.
Yeah,
if I'm handwriting,
fingertips,
my hand gets sore after a while.
Well, I was about like withdrawing, Gráinne. Was that
No. I think you use slightly
different muscles. You do. You have a different direction.
When I was exhibiting last year at the Westport Festival, I met this American woman who was evidently quite high up in, I don't know what the proper word would be for it, but the delegates that make decisions in America on the education system. And she said she was in a meeting the month before, and they were discussing not teaching children to write.
They were discussing that as a possibility?
Yeah. They will have tablets, small digital tablets.
How about if there's electricity
outage? At the age of three, they won't need paper anymore, they won't need pencils anymore, and it's better for the children to learn to type and use a keyboard than to write. They will learn the alphabet, she said, upper and lower case, but it's too time consuming and it's not necessary. How frightening is that?
Yeah, which makes the mind boggle, all right, but like I personally think the validity of writing would be important, like, because it's an instant thought process, and it is, like you say, you're separated one degree if you put everything on computer, you know.
Yeah. But this laziness as well of losing your confidence of spelling, and you know, you used to, if you wrote it down and saw it, you go, oh yeah, that's right. You sort of know how it looks, didn't you? Well, I've lost all that because you're so used to pressing spell check.
Plus, regardless whether you write or not, you write a different message when you're writing with a pencil or a paper than you write on typing.
Email.
Mm. Well, I do anyway. It's definitely a different formation of words, different way of expressing. Mm. And even if you take one and you're trying to copy it back on, you do change it.
Yeah. And I think also, I do think that there's a certain calmer or feel, or there's that thing of like, because you're thinking of that person, you're writing slowly, it's nice that there's crossings out, you know, because again it's that the other person that receives it is aware of that thought process that you've gone through. And then there's that whole thing about you thinking of that person going to the post office, getting the stamp, and the second you let go of it, you're thinking, I wonder how long it's going to take to get there. I wonder if I'll get a letter back.
Get it back?
Yeah.
I do like the idea some friend of mine's on about it, because like spelling tortures me. And like this idea that you can like speak into something and it types it out for you. And I'm dying to get my hands on one of those because it would suit me. Because when sometimes I just go blank when I start trying to write things down. And I keep talking. But like, but I haven't got to try it out yet. But it's something I'd love to do.
My God, my letters would be like War and Peace. Then they'd be like 20,000 pages long if they ever, if it just was dictated from my mouth with a verbal diarrhea that comes out sometimes.
Can I ask you a different type of question, more a practical question? You know, when you were making your tea set and your chair and your table, what process did you use to attach the stamps? Was it like a papier-mâché process? Or
no, when you're decoupaging, because that's effectively...
Okay, that's a good word, decoupage.
Decoupage.
Yeah.
That's like decoupage when you used to do the three-level layers.
Well, it's as far as I know, it just means sticking something onto...
Okay.
And you can decoupage anything as long as the materials that you use aren't... If it's got a glossy finish to it, very often it's a sandwich of a layer with the paper underneath, so they separate once the glue's on. But if you know, you can use, and I do use in my craft workshops, you know, old magazines, newspapers, letters, tickets from gigs and things, the stamps. And it's a very satisfying process. And on old furniture, you may have a vase or something that you like the shape of, but it's got a horrible motif on it or design it, you don't want it. It's a very therapeutic process. So when the stamps came, depending on how they came, if they came on a envelope or if they came just torn off as a corner, or if they came in a complete letter, I'd document the contents of the letter or the date and the country, and maybe look up a bit, Google whatever a little bit more about if it was from a country that, you know, I hadn't had anybody from Ireland before. And then wetting them slightly means that they absorb the glue better, and then when they dry, they've of course expanded a little bit with the water, and then when they dry, they adhere much better, stronger. So it's PVA.
PVA. And do you remove the stamp from the envelope paper?
Yeah. So soak it. It will soak off. The stamps today are not as easy because they use a different fixative.
Yeah, you don't pick them anymore.
No, they're not as easy to detach.
Like there's a barrier.
So I just had a thought. Imagine all that saliva on that
tea set.
On that tea set.
Yeah. Or the DNA. yeah, there's another story.
And would you water down your PVA?
No, no.
Just straight PVA?
Yeah, and PVA onto whatever
and
you're
PVA sitting.
PVA over and over again. And I find as well that is the best, a water-based glue like that is the best thing to use. And, I mean, you can use a water-based varnish, but you must make sure it's a clear one, unless you want that aged, antique, smoky effect, because it soon yellows.
So the last coat in yours is a coat of...
Yeah, PVA.
PVA.
Yeah. And the other thing I found out with the stamps was, interior design now, we're all being subliminally channeled to admire a certain style of something. I mean, you know, this whole filigree curling butterflies and birds, you know, suddenly it's on fabric, it's on wallpaper.
You know what I often think, and it's only a thought I have never expressed, you know Big Brother when you see it come out the first day?
Yeah.
You can be sure that's kind of, like, say, a couple of years ago, it was very clean and clinical and those bright colours. There was tons and tons of stuff with those, like, old pictures redone, blown back up big. A bit like you say, the filigree.
Yeah.
That's part of what's either going to be or has just been.
Absolutely.
And even though it's like a big media stuff and it's done in a very garish fashion, if you actually break it down, some of that is...
Is this the programme on telly?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
See, I look at it in a slightly different way. I take my Big Brother very seriously. Even though it's pure rubbish.
But it's been delegated to some channel that nobody watches anymore.
Channel 5. Okay. Yeah.
But fashions, what I'm saying is that, like...
But it is. That element of what is kind of off the now, or just being off the now, will be there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And palettes of colours are recognisable by their decade.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can look at those that table now, and
like the avocado green, like, that disappeared.
Yeah.
And the pastel colours from the 60s.
Absolutely. And if it's a single ink, you know, role and design, it's usually when there's a war on. And if they're muted colours. So if you look and your eye picks up on those single colour prints, it's you can bet your bottom dollar it'll be like First World War, Second World War, Boer War, there'll be something going on in that country at that time. And, you know, there's a certain sort of, like, group of colours that would be used in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, all the way through, really. And designs are emulated.
Well, when people try and redo, say, something from the 60s, like as a music video.
Yeah, there's a certain
graphic.
You
actually, very quickly, by the colour, know the time they're trying to give you.
Yeah. So that's another thing. These little stamps are these tiny little sort of tableaus of history, and, you know, 2 centimetres by 1 centimetre, or whatever, and they'll tell you so much about who rules at that time, what event was going on, the flora and fauna of the country, you know, and the perforations around the outside change. They're actually, you know, specifically, there might be 12 on the top and 11 on the side to stop fraud.
Mm.
You know, and all these little bits, this tiny little piece of paper that has been designed, thought of. I mean, we know people... I mean,
and been through quite
program,
a few hands as well. Yeah,
before it's printed and passed and they're copyrighted and, you know, all this. But we're just thinking of, you know, the arts is always sort of, I don't know, not always respected in the manner in which it should be. And you imagine just saying, when I grow up, I'd like to design stamps.
Well, it's a great honour for any artist to be asked to design a stamp.
Mm.
Or to be on a stamp.
Or to be, well,
like,
can you be on one and still be alive?
Well, wasn't it that, is that Orla, that lady that
Orla Keeley?
Yes, wasn't she? There's something about some Irish designers being on stamps recently. I haven't the full information on it, but it is like a very big tribute if they've got any connection.
Writers, they did Seamus Keeney before he died. Didn't they?
Yeah. Anyway, that's
something I haven't looked at that much, to be honest with you, but obviously you haven't close detail.
Well,
can you tell us about the next song we're going to play, Nikki? Pete Williams, are you listening?
We are in, Pete is in town at the moment. Pete wrote and sings with Dex's Midnight Runners. He wrote Gino. And we're in town with Al Gare. You might have seen him around as well, rockabilly chap. We thought Paddy was the only rockabilly in town, but nope, there's another one now. And
I bet he doesn't have the flat top.
No. So, we had a fantastic day yesterday. We are recording a demo for Imelda Domain. And Al has written a song called Tears of Clue Bay. And he wrote it last year when he was staying with us. And Imelda loves it, and she sings it now at the end of her show. And we've suggested that we brought the Clue Bay Pipers into it to sort of like really give it some depth and another layer, and she loved the idea. So that's what we were doing yesterday, and Pete came over and played guitar with it. Pete and Al are very good friends. And this is from Pete's album, C. And what I love about this song, I mean, the whole album is about his life and him growing up. And this is about his father. And it's not connected with letters, but it's about really your parents trying to tell you something and whether you decide to listen or not. I love it.
Okay.
Took one look at father, dumb sleeping in his vest, and I thank God I'm smarter than the rest. Wait until I'm older. Find a place, friends I've yet to meet. He said, son, are you listening to me? Oh, my son, are you listening to me? We could not drink the water, but we partook in the feast. Now I've learned. Play music in a band. My shoes then won't be second hand. But he said, son, are you listening to me? Oh, my son, are you listening to me? Get a job. So important, we'll be right back.
That's a nice rockin' song, isn't it?
Lovely, lovely. I just like the sentiment of it as well, because he was listening.
This is Nikki Dowd, our guest at the moment on the Arts Show here on WRFM.ie. And Nikki, can you tell people again where they can see your work? Are you on Facebook?
Yeah, I am on Facebook. If you want to look at the project and a little bit of the film, if you go onto Facebook, and it's the An Post Project, so it is
A-N-P-O-S-T.
Well, we pronounce it on.
On, sorry. I'll learn. I've got a long way to go. Yeah, the On Post Project. You should be able to pick that up, and Nikki Dowd. And then my website is www.nickydowd, and it's NickyDowd.co.uk, which has all of my work on and the arts that projects that I get involved in at home, and I really hope that
Birmingham.
But the house is on the market now if anybody wants to buy a house in Birmingham. Special discount to Westport listeners. I'm going to be moving over here as soon as possible.
Oh, really? You're moving
when you say here, heard
to Westport.
All right,
yeah.
Well, you're just from visiting here that you decided that? Because have you having connections here?
Well, my father-in-law is from Balahedrin, and we came here from the age of, 15?
To Balahedrin?
To Balahedrin.
That's what I mean, but Westport wouldn't have a connection.
But then Westport was always the day out.
Okay.
But bizarrely, you know, I met Eugene very young, my husband, and even though I went to a university in Spithorpe and whatever, we always kept in contact, and I did try to wash that man right out of my hair, and it didn't work. But anyway, so we've been married for 32 years, and we always came to Ireland. I always felt very, very comfortable here. But as far as I was concerned, I was Yorkshire, you know, English, Church of England, and married the sort of like the eldest son of a big Catholic family, but just felt very, very comfortable in Ireland. And 6 years ago, my grandmother died, and she was 96. Actually, for her 90th birthday, she asked if she could come to Ireland with us. So we brought her to Ireland, and she sang in the pubs, and she danced. And it never occurred to me to say, how do you know the words to that song? You know, or how do you know that dance? Just never occurred to me. And she also gave me this little sort of skillet here that I wear for my 21st birthday. And I just thought, oh, well, I'm marrying somebody who's got Irish connections. I'll like it. And, you know, it's dated 1870 on the bottom of it. And when she died, I was at the funeral and I met all these Yorkshire relatives. And they said, oh, you know, what are you doing now, Nicky? You know, how was it going? And we said, well, we've just bought a plot of land in Ireland and we're going to build a house. And she said, we went there all the time when we were kids. We hated it. It were always wet and windy and horrible. And your grandfather would go fishing and you never got any fish. And your grandma would always cross. And we were sick on the boat with the cattle. And they went on and on and on and on. And I said, so why did you go to Ireland? She said, we went there every blinking holiday we had to go to Ireland. And I said, why? She said, because your great-grandfather was from a little place called Westport.
Oh, really?
I had no idea, and neither did my dad. So my grandma was one of nine. She was the only female.
And what was the family name?
Ford.
Okay.
So I am digging.
Oh, well, no better
big
woman,
time.
I suppose, to start that, all right.
And it was just spooky and goosebumpy, but actually it just makes sense to me. I feel like I'm coming home.
And do you have any plans for your time now that you're going to settle in Westport permanently? Do you have plans?
I'd like to see it as a sort of blank canvas that's ready to be scribbled on and cut
or posted
up
on.
Or whatever, yeah. Yeah, I'll keep you posted on that, haha. But it's really at home. I work as a community artist with schools, and I would work very closely with the teachers and decide on a subject in the curriculum, and then we would work with all the parents, the aunties, the uncles, the grandparents, all the children to come up with a design and a composition, and then I would help them transpose that composition onto exterior or interior areas, whether it's 3D or 2D or whatever, working in all mediums. And that's something I would love to get involved with and help people with here. And it's that sense of ownership and creating something with all ages, so that you really learn from everybody else's skills. And getting mum and dad and grandma to get involved and, you know, pick up a paintbrush and they say, I'm not artistic, it's rubbish, you know, just need guiding and encouraging.
And would you have an art background that would be relevant to that sort of work?
Well, interestingly, I did a foundation course at Bourneville College of Art in Birmingham, and then I went to Leeds and did graphics and specialised in film and television graphics then. So it was more like animation, top and tailing, but it was hand-rendered animation, you know. And as soon as I graduated, it went digital. And I am not somebody that could sit in a dark room and press some buttons and work on the paint box and all the, you know, it's just not me. So I ended up working in exhibitions and sort of creating work in schools and things. And I have to be somebody that is physically sort of getting stuck into something mentally and my hands getting dirty and feeling it, you know. And so I just have gravitated back towards the workshops, working with people. It's another thing I'd really like to do when families are in town and they want to create something, going for a walk on the beach, collecting all the materials and then wiring them together and making some sort of hanging or whatever, and then decoupaging, using old Irish magazines to cover something. And so there's lots of...
And do you have a workshop in your home?
Yes.
That would accommodate this type of thing?
Yeah, I've just found one. It was a 3-hour workshop, and I actually, because I don't crochet or knit, I'm not that sort of crafter. So a friend of mine, who's a head of textiles, there's a big school in Birmingham, she did an hour's crocheting. And, I mean, you know, if you've never picked up a crochet hook, an hour is quite intense to actually achieve something. You did an hour crocheting, and then another lady did jewellery, antique jewellery, so she had old crystals and pearls and things like that. So you make 3 pairs of earrings with her, and then you come to me, and I have all the old 1950s and 60s Vogue magazines and maps, and then you decoupage. They were big jam jars that we did. So.
Great.
Very good.
I'd like to do that here.
To go back to something you were talking about earlier, you know, you're saying you're doing the demo. How do you get, what was your link with the demo for Imelda May?
Yeah. Al is, as I said, Al Gower is a friend of ours, and he has worked, and indeed Pete Williams too, worked with Imelda way before she went out on her own. They were part of her band. And Al is the double bass player. And he wrote this song, which she really loved. And they sing it just with him on uke and her on the Bodrum drum. And what happened was Eugene, my husband, suggested that we got the Clube Pipers involved because it needed something, another layer bringing to it, and perhaps Des with the whistle and build it up with a guitar and whatever. And we suggested it to Imelda, and she really liked the idea, and Al said, you know.
So you kind of like working as an agent or a producer or just in the background?
As a friend.
Okay.
That is just thinking of an idea and coordinating it and facilitating it, really, trying to make it happen. And, of course, we talked to Des, and Des says, yeah, we can do this. And unfortunately, this new studio, which is going to be very exciting,
that
Bart is doing. Yeah, what a great guy he is, and John.
Yeah, we're hoping to have them on someday to have a chat. They already agreed, so it's nearer the time they're going to open. It'll be a new studio out in Kylie's building, out the quay, where Sat Kylie had the antique shop.
Yeah.
Can I just mention here that there is another recording studio in town, Sound FX, and the guy who owns it is sitting here in the radio station. I don't think he's listening.
He is, he's
smiling. Big cheesy grin there.
Okay, he just heard that.
Yeah, Bart, I think he's going to be known as Golden Ears soon. But anyway, we were looking for a venue because, of course, the problem was the difference in decibels between Al singing with his uke and a guitar, and then 30 pipers.
Yeah, because they played in the customs house, like, it's loud sound on us in
there. Yeah. So we looked and looked and looked for venues, and we sort of asked around, and we ended up being in Mojo's, and thank you to Mojo's for allowing us to have that space.
That's the nightclub at the Castle Court Hotel.
I was just saying, this is slightly of an age, because Gráinne mentioned this yesterday, and I said, where's Mojo's?
Yeah. Where's Mojo's?
Because I'm like, that just shows the last time I was out.
Well, I had to think myself where Mojo's was.
Yeah, so what we did is we recorded in layers, and then we recorded it all together. Bart brought all the equipment down, and to give Imelda sort of like the best chance of how we thought as a suggestion she might like to develop it.
She's got to sing over this.
Yes, but we've recorded it with the lovely Joanne Keegan.
Right.
So she was the voice to so that everybody could hear how the verses worked with the choruses and how it builds and everything, and the snares come on. Actually, I mean, it's funny because the last words of it is "Now we must sleep." And it sort of builds and builds and builds and builds, and then it goes quiet, and it's "Now we must sleep." And then it goes... it's like it all starts up again, you know. It's like, well, maybe not sleeping today, but anyway, it's...
So, like, these are on different tracks, so you can take Joanne's voice out and supplement Imelda May's.
Yes. Oh, well, this is just the demo. We really don't know where it's going to go, and there's a long way to go because it's going to have to be passed through all her record company. And, you know, we are just friends trying to help it happen, you know. Okay. And because we know the musicians and they're friends of ours and Des and everything, the children yesterday, and there was a little Imelda May as well. She's 12, she looked about 6, but she dressed up as Imelda May and she was there with the pipes. And it was phenomenal. I mean, just such a charged energy, you know, in the room, and Pete on guitar, and you know, Al on his uke, and Joanne singing, and this whole.
Joanne has such a great voice.
Joanne's great voice, yeah.
Lovely. So yeah, and Al actually phoned Imelda in the middle of it and said, "Okay, you know, do you want to hear it?" And she went, "Yeah." She was just putting the little girl to bed.
After coming back from Buckingham Palace.
Yeah. That's right.
She's well able to go.
I know. She's mixing with them all now.
Well, we have another song, The Beatles, All My Loving.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you. Remember, I'll always be true. And then while I'm away, I'll write home every day. And I'll send all my loving to you. I'll pretend that I'm missing the lips I am missing. And hope that my dreams will come true. And then while I'm away, I'll ride home every day, and I'll send all my loving to you. All my loving
And that was Wee Banjo 3, Gonna Write Me a Letter. It's all about letters. All
letters in the post. I must say, throw your question and you're wet, like, there's no bothering you talking, so fair play.
I've just so enjoyed it. You know, it's something that I feel very excited about.
Yeah, you obviously are very passionate about the whole project and it's obviously taking wings and it'll continue to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's taken me by surprise, really. I didn't know how many legs it would develop.
As many as a table, anyway.
Yes.
And do you see it going where the next taunt is like trying to get the letters from here?
Yeah, it just seems a completely natural process for me that this is the next place I need to do, you know, and I need to do it. I need to find people here with letters and with stories, and that's what I'd really like. If anybody knows anybody or they have a story themselves, to contact you here or to contact me on my Facebook page or by my website.
A story about what now?
A story about them staying here and the rest of the family leaving, and the letters that they received and the content of the letters that were swapped backwards and forwards. So I would really like to get in contact with those people that were left behind, if you like, by choice or not, or if anybody has any other letters.
Did you ever come across any poison pen letters?
No, I haven't, I have to say.
Just think.
No, if anyone's got a poison pen letter, let's make the appeal now. You heard it here first. Against,
like a nasty letter.
Nasty, that's yeah. Like
nasty letter, no.
I bet you won't either.
No, and I think what's a good one, if you think of the nicest letter you received and the worst letter you received, you know, that's a good sort of way of... and it doesn't matter if you haven't got those letters. I think if you've received a letter that's stuck in your head, you know, I want to hear that story about that particular letter, where it came from and what it told you.
But you might not necessarily use that information because you will have to edit your film down to...
Yeah. Well, I don't know, you see. The thing is, I have no idea what this film's going to be about. Like I didn't at the beginning. So until I meet people and I hear the stories, that will give me the direction for the film.
And it will be a film. It won't be a book or a blog or...
No, I want to do a series, really.
It will be a film.
Yeah, because it's very important that I think people see those people's faces, because it's about the emotion they face when they're telling the story as well, and the characters... that are here, you know, in Ireland, because hopefully Pierce O'Reilly from Irish TV has my boot, actually, which I covered in stamps.
Your boot?
My boot, yeah. I covered, sorry, I forgot to tell you about the boot. When I did the arts festival, I decided to do something that would stay in Westport, because it was very, very important to me that I launched my first film and the project, the Ampros project, here in Westport. And so I had a boot that it was an old boot of Eugene's father's, so he'd worked, you know, in all the drains and the roofs and whatever in Birmingham, so that was covered in stamps, and it was, you know, to me, incredibly symbolic of the Irish workers that had built most of Birmingham, and indeed most of the world in some shape or form. And Pierce said, I would really like the boot, and I'll support you and broadcast any of your visual material for you, so that...
Very good.
Because the thing is to get it to the biggest audience as I can to help me with my research.
Did you run out of stamps or what? What about the next second boot?
I have got more stamps still, and people are still sending me their stamps and their letters, and I'd really like to do perhaps a spade.
Okay.
Why not?
That'd be nice.
And are you still collecting stamps?
Of course.
You still want them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, please. And the other thing is that, of course, all our children or a lot of young men and women are leaving now. And they won't write, probably. They may write the odd postcard or Christmas card or birthday card home, but generally even birthday cards are coming through emails. But it's important for me to have the new stamps of letters that are leaving Ireland and that are keeping people connected, as it is any old ones that you find. So...
Well, I'd say a lot of those stamps would be on bills these days.
Oh, great. Very sad. Very
sad. Yeah. But true, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately.
Actually.
Yeah.
Well, the very best of luck with your continuing projects.
Thank you so much.
And welcome to Westport.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see lots of you around.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
Thank you very much, Nikki Dowd. And we're going to play you out with Alison Moyet, Love Letters.
love led astray from your heart. Keep us so near, what a part. I'm not alone in the night, when I can have all the love you. Kiss the name that you signed, and darling, then I read again right from the start. Love led astray. Kiss the name that you signed, and darling, then I read again right from the start. Love led astray from your.
Fighting was all over, and the battle had been won. Then I opened up the letter, and it started, "Dear John." Please send back my picture. My husband wants it now. When I tell you who I'm wedding, you won't care, dear, anyhow. Now the ceremony has started, and I'll wed your brother, Don. Will you wish his happiness forever, dear John?
now Nikki has left the studio.
So it's back to myself and Grania again.
Two of us.
Now, we've a note here from Caitlin, who did worked here in the station for a long time. And her dad, Mike Bernard, has a show coming up in the Clue Bay next Tuesday at 8:45.
That's the 8th of April.
It's the Tuesday afterwards. And like a lot of people would know Mike's work and have Mike's work, like they're very strong. I don't know what this exhibition is of, but the ones like the Dapple Light in the Woods and the lights over Clue Bay and the lights from on the Reek and different people. I know his work is very strong and very well respected. So the best of luck to everybody in that show. And that show opens up in the Clue Bay and it's actually the launch of his website as well.
Yeah, that's it.
So the best of luck to Mike and Jenny and all the family for that.
Yeah, best of luck to as well, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. Breda, yesterday we went to Castlebar.
Yes, now there was the Fine project. Now we're going to Grania's got some recorded already from some of the interviews, but I'm hoping, both of us are hoping to try and get to talk to some of the artists involved and some of the mentors over the next couple of weeks, and we'll bring you a package on the Fine project. Might as well tell people it's on now so they can go and look at it. It's on all over Castlebar, and the exhibition space in the Linen Hall has been turned into studios for the month, and some of the different artists, there'll be some artists there every day for the duration of the project.
Yeah, you can have a look upstairs in the gallery of the Linen Hall, and That's where the artists are more or less based.
But the works are all over the town, and some of them are temporary pieces. Say yesterday, now Amanda Rice reenacted a tug and war race with the women from the hat factory, and the strongest man in Ireland, who at the time was on, there was a carnival in town, and that's how they ended up doing it. Grania, do you have the list there of all the artists?
I do, yeah.
Ian Fiachoric, Nuala Clark, Amanda Rice,
Alice Dixon, Anthony Champa, Joanna Hopkins, Chris Leach, and we left out Crystal Gandrud.
Yeah, she works with Nuala Clark.
Well, I didn't get to see all of it. I saw Amanda's tug of war on the Mall, and actually it was great. It was very well organised. Well done, Amanda. And I really liked the fact that it's a historical thing. It's something that happened in 1953 or something.
And three of the ladies that were there, and Patsy, one of the men who said he was the mascot, were there in real life. And there was four grandchildren of the original group of women that had the tug of war race, acting in the tug of war.
And wasn't that tug of war at that time against the strongest man in Ireland?
It was, that there was a carnival on town at the time.
Did they win, Breda?
The women win, believe it or not. I don't know. It was a genuine reenactment.
In the 50s, did they win?
Seemingly she reenacted it exactly as it was.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, Breda was doing the comparing. What do you call it, Breda? You were doing the Micheál Morality.
Amanda asked me to do it. It's something I've never done before. I was very nervous doing it, even though I hope I didn't come across that way. So what I did is I have a lovely old bowler hat from Pongo Kelly.
Oh, that's cool.
I'd sitting at home, I said, like, my put me in the 1950 mood. And just because somebody asked you to do something, you're doing it for them, not for yourself. So I was trying to take what I felt Amanda wanted, and I kind of felt she just wanted to have a bit of a Howie kind of feel to it.
Well, I feel a new career coming on, Breda, because you did a great job. You kept the talk going, you kept the crack going, you had all the information, and
it's very hard to judge because I was totally outside, so I have no judge.
And you got the crowd going, you know, come on, girls, come on, you know. And
I was trying to be fair. Come on, Paul, as well, every now and then, to the strong man.
Is he the strongest man in Ireland?
He was strongest man in 2013 in Ireland, yeah. He didn't look like it, did he?
He did.
But I wouldn't have went arm wrestling with him, I tell you that for nothing.
Oh, no, he did look strong.
But it was interesting, like, and they did do, they kept to the rules, like, there's, like, a rope has to be a certain diameter, and there's your centre line, and so, and I think Amanda enjoyed doing it. She started this project, she found a photograph, and realised her own grandmother was in this tug of war.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, so her project then is documenting the process of getting that all organised.
Yeah. So well done, Amanda. I mean, it was a bit of fun, and the rain stayed off, and...
One by one, we get some of the artists we've had in already, but we definitely want to get some of the artists we haven't had in already. And hopefully, I've been chatting to Aideen Barry, who herself and Alice Maher did the mentoring for this project. And Aideen's booked in a day to come and have an interview with us. And
she'll be really interesting to talk to.
She's fascinating. I've always liked her. I liked her from day one. You know, she's really good, and she's a goer.
So that's fine, and it's all over Castlebar, and it's a series of temporary artworks and installations and events in and around Castlebar. And the works are installed, you know, you can walk around, they're installed within walking distance of each other and found via maps included on the brochure. Or you can, there's some guided tours, and the Linen Hall is the sort of central headquarters studio for the artists and the audience. And it's a collaboration between the Linen Hall Arts Centre and Mayo County Council Public Art Programme, curated by Mayo County Council Public Art. What is she?
Well, Beginner Seville, I think, is the main project leader. She seems to be involved in a lot of projects at the moment.
Yeah. So the find, that's fine. And see, can you find Chris Leach's little drawings in the windows?
Yeah, he was here before. He does those tiny little miniatures. And Nuala Clark has her flags around town. And is it Joanna did the old cinema?
Now, some of the events and shows were on after dark.
I saw the start of Ian's. Seems really clever. Do you know, in the Linen Hall, do you know there's the big thing where they had an advertisement, the big glass box inside the main door? You know, the side door, the stage door of the Linen Hall? He put a video in behind that. I thought, good, Anya, good place to have found the space. And I think it's water upside down, but it looks like smoke.
Okay.
Because Ian's a great man for trawling the internet. He's very good at picking up on things.
And he has a good conceptual head, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he's a brain, kind of, and he's very good at verbalising and following these sort of projects through. Now, Ian hasn't been on with us, so I'm hoping very much we collar him in the next short while.
Can we talk about Stefan Lusek?
We can't. Now, can I just say, one of the reasons we're mentioning the fine now is so people can go and look at it, because we won't be on for, because Ger Reedy is on next week. He always does the first of the month. It just started this year.
Yeah.
So it'll be after that we'll be on with some things. But we do want to let people know it's on so they can go and have a look at it.
Yeah. Well worth going to see.
And it's great to have Ger on board doing the one.
It is, yeah. I'm actually looking forward next week to just listening instead of being here.
Yeah, I find I've listened to all the shows he's put out, yes. Yeah.
Well done, Ger. Well, the Custom House, out in the Custom House now, there are two exhibitions. Upstairs, there's John Cullen, and his paintings are based on aerial images.
Who said he would come and chat to us when he's back down towards the end of these exhibition?
And some of these images come from the US drone attacks in the Middle East, so they're quite they're not just blocks of colour thrown onto a canvas, but instead of the normally grey, grainy colours that would be associated with those electronic warfare images, he jazzed them up and threw really bright blue and bright yellow.
Kind of like reminiscent of quilt kind of shapes, aren't they? Like, you know, the way it feels when you're in an air balloon or something, have that kind of grid effect.
Yeah, I mean, he kept some of the dull colours, you know, of sand or mud, but you know, every now and then you'd see a bright
brilliant blue, I think, in the one you're looking at there.
Yeah, or there'd be a cad yellow or something.
Or cerulean. People seem to pronounce that colour slightly different.
Well, I say cerulean.
And I say cerulean. And I'd say, I'm feeling cerulean is the right one, though. I've been trying to listen lately.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, when I learn a word and I've never heard it, I learn it by reading it, what I think it would sound like when I read it. And I tend to stick with that. So quite often I pronounce things badly.
Well, I know I do. And I've noticed, actually, and I just say, listening back sometimes, I've an awful habit, because there's three sentences in my head.
You just said habit.
Habit. I'd say, because there's three, I'm summarising all of them. So you end up with a half sentence sometimes. So like, something I was listening to recently, I said, oh my God, I have to finish my words.
Three words mashed into one.
Yes. So they become like this, like a new word. But seemingly, hopefully the context gets taken in anyway. Now, alongside
John Cullen upstairs in the Custom House at the moment.
And it was a nice opening that there. We were at the opening, weren't you, at it, Grania? Sometimes the Custom House has like one show between upstairs and downstairs, and sometimes it's two separate ones. So downstairs, and we have an interview by Stefan. Stefan is right. Stefan
Lusak.
It's L-U-S-Z-C-A-Z-A-K.
Lusak.
Yeah.
Lusak.
And he's from, you know that place the trouble is at the minute?
He's from the Ukraine.
Yes. So this is an interview he did just before his opening. He took time out to chat to us.
Well, we're going to play Billy Clark first, and then that will be followed straight after by Breda's interview with Stefan, which was conducted at and New Custom House.
And I just say, he gave me a list, which is on a piece of paper I don't have in front of me at the minute, of some sounds he liked. And the only one I remembered in my head he did like is the Sex Pistols' God Save the Queen, and that's played in the middle of his interview.
And you can blame me for that, because Breda gave me a piece of paper with the songs written on it, and don't give me bits of paper. Okay.
Next time it'll be an email.
Or text. Here's Billy Clark.
Climbed steep hill, sleeping still. Cold wind whispers in my mind. A place I love and hate at will. It's picked me up a thousand times. Took a shot to start the day. One more just to toe the line. If you can only see me now, will you turn your head and cry? Below the streets seemed in the fight, in their crown of misty dew. As I stand to be crucified here on Prospect Avenue, fierce to tread, black ink of a broken line. For a shallow piece of life, masquerade a waste of time. Took a shot to start the day, one more just to toe the line. If you could only see me now, will you turn your head and cry? Below the streets seemed in the fight, in their crown of misty dew. As I stand to be crucified here on Prospect Avenue. Smoke rings high, still like faded crescent moons. Took a shot to end the day, one more just to feel the night. You could only see me now, girl, you turn your head and cry. Below the streets seemed in the fight, in their crown of misty dew. As I stand to be crucified here on Prospect Avenue, pay the stars, they burned so bright, they were bound to blow through. When they do, we'll run and hide on Prospect Avenue.
hello. Welcome again to the Art Show with me, Breda Burns, and with us today we've Stefan Lustjak.
Hello, good evening.
Have I pronounced that properly?
You have, yeah, that's fine.
Stefan, actually, or
Stefan.
Stefan, I knew I wasn't going to get that right. You're very welcome. Welcome to Westport and welcome to your show here in the Customs House Gallery. And we're here the night after your open. Fair play, you came in before the opening to have a few words with us.
It's very quiet, yeah.
Because you're heading back tomorrow, so we won't get a chance to have you in.
Oh, Sunday. You're okay, yeah.
Now, your show is called Landscapes of South Mayo. Now, as a quick look, there seems to be two distinctive works. There's the Reek and there's Dulach Valley. That's right.
Yeah. I'm inspired by both places, really, but especially Croagh-Patrick, because a friend, Sean, who was born in this area, he's got a house here, and from there you can see Croagh-Patrick and... So, you know, I didn't have to go very far, and, you know, that Croagh-Patrick was...
Whereabouts?
It's in Killadoon.
Oh, that's a beautiful spot.
Very beautiful, very nice spot.
Okay, that makes sense, because it's the back of the rink, it's the images you have there.
Yeah. So, you know, I realised I didn't have to travel too far, and Dulach is very close by as well. But
Turned the other way.
Yeah, but...
So you've circumvented the rink.
Yeah, because I'm not here for that long. Well, last time I was here for 2 weeks, but yeah. I mean, we went up to Achill, and... But I realised that, you know, from there I could work, and it was an easy place to work from. So,
It is kind of an iconic mountain when you.
It's a beautiful mountain. Yeah. I got to know every contour, every little bit of the mountain, really. And I realised when I got home, you know, I probably wrote it in my that I could do it from memory. You know, I remembered every single. You know, shape and ravine and every part of the mountain, really.
You say here on your blurb for the exhibition that, like, people bring the memory of the mountain with them even when they go, which I actually would think is very true.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Like you say, because it's such an iconic mountain, and, you know, I did climb up it. First time I came here, I got as far as, the very steep screen.
The shoulder, like, the forest.
I'd had a pair of walking boots since I was like 14 or something.
Do you mean you weren't in your feet?
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, I should have.
That's a joke.
Yeah. But the boots just fell apart, on the way.
I've seen people come down there with high heels, honest to God.
Yeah.
I think that people tend to just go as far as the statue sometimes
and
keep going.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people. But it sounds like you've been coming west of Ireland for a while, have you?
For the past 2 or 3 years, I've been coming quite as often as I can, really, and most of the work I do from, I take a lot of photographs when I come, so most of the work I do when I get back to England and work from those. I mean, I don't mind, really, you know, sometimes I can really work well from photographs, but I do prefer to be where I'm actually painting. Yeah.
And would you draw in combination with the photographs?
I do watercolours and, sketches and things like that.
We're sitting here in the window in the Customs House. We're looking into the big gallery, and we can see there's three landscapes of the reef, taken actually from Killadoon side, I'd imagine, were they?
That's right, yeah.
And is it like they're either different days or different lights? Which would you...
It was the same day, yeah. It was the first one on the left is... early morning, so I made an effort to get up very early and work, 2-3 hours maybe, and then the second one in the middle is more kind of, the middle of the day, and then the last one is early evening, to late evening.
Yeah.
So I made a conscious effort to work quite quickly. I wanted to keep them, more a bit freer and.
And you will notice around here, like, the light changes very quickly.
Yeah, it does. And especially, and I painted those last August when it was very hot, and.
Our one heat wave in about 1,000 years.
That's right.
You noticed that in your writing for the show.
Yeah.
We're still hoping for another one.
It'd be nice.
After the winter we've had. Now, by your accent. You're English, but you've got descent from somewhere else. You're saying, I just met you very briefly yesterday.
Yeah, well, originally I'm from Nottingham, a city called Nottingham, and
That's right, sure. Yes. We're Robin Hood.
Nottingham Forest. Yes. Yeah. But my dad's Ukrainian, hence the name. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he left the Ukraine when he was 16, I think he left, and he's in his 80s, late 80s now, and he's never been back. He left his village. He's from a farming community. He left his village when he was 16, like I say, on the back of a you know, like a horse-drawn carriage, you know, and yeah, never went back. Yeah. Well, he couldn't go back for political reasons. And it's all, you know, at the moment, it's all coming up again.
It is, isn't it? God, yes.
Yeah, those exactly. Old resentments.
And you kind of feel you don't know what's really going on. You're reading all this media stuff, but you feel you don't really know what's going on.
No.
It must touch you, like, more than, you know, you must be very conscious of it.
I am, yeah. But, and it's the first time, really. I mean, there was the Orange Revolution a few years ago, and we got quite involved in that. But this time, I think it's just very different, you know. I mean, the Russians were shooting Ukrainians in the street in Kiev, you know, you've got to do something about that, you know, and you know, the Russians...
It sounds like nearly a minefield, like a political minefield, like, it's just like, do the wrong thing and things could go worse.
It really is a tinderbox, yeah. And I was afraid the other week, I was watching the news on TV and the Ukrainian forces were trying to take back, you know, it was in Crimea, their base, you know, and they're trying to take back, the Russians had taken it over. And they were on
these guys with the no names uniforms.
Yeah, they were the and they're all on. But the Ukrainians weren't armed, you know. They marched to, and they were threatened, you know. The Russians fired shots in the air, and
have you chatted to your dad about it?
Yeah.
Must be very moving, or
it is. Yeah, mainly because of what's happened in the past. In the 1930s, there was a famine. Well, it was Stalin there was an enforced famine in Ukraine, and estimated 9 million people died. But as in the past, you know, the Russians have always swept things like that under the carpet. It's all propaganda and what people need to know and want to know. And, you know, it's, and those old, it's much more than just a resentment. You know, my dad is very unsure of what's going to happen, you know, and Putin's, you know, not to be trusted, I don't think, you know. But it's gone on, it's always gone on like that.
Yeah, well, hopefully now there's some resolution. We don't normally, we're to be afraid to go to politics here in the Arctic because we're afraid to, we're very opinionated, we try to have no opinions. it's something I think has been in everyone's hearts and minds at the minute.
In a way I'm quite relieved that it's gone off the top news story. For a week or two it was really touch and go. I was very scared, actually.
But it does actually something that makes you realise how small the world actually is.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
It really is a changed place. Were you aware, like, in your second room, your work is to Laugh Valley. Were you aware that there was a famine walk there?
Yeah.
Which actually is linked in with what you just said about the famine. Do you think it's not? Can I skip on to the piece?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the second room in the gallery. It's the smaller room, but like there's like strong dark basis with darker skies than in your rig pieces, and actually darker ground. Did you consciously or unconsciously do that?
I think it was unconscious, but it did move me, you know, the idea of the people who were dying walking somewhere, you know, where they should have had some food but were just denied any, just meeting the people there, and you know, on the walk back a lot of people died, you know, so. Yeah, I'm very much aware. I think that, maybe that does come out. I wasn't consciously aware of it, but talking about the famine in Ukraine it does resonate, really, yeah. And it is unconscious, but...
Sometimes as artists, you work consciously and unconsciously. Well, that's right. Both kind of overlap, and you don't know which you're getting, really, sometimes.
That's right, yeah. It could be to do with, at home, I work in I've got a cellar, so it is, you know, I use... spotlights and things, so yeah, it's I think it does come up. Well, hopefully that comes across in the work, you know.
And is there, though, you've series the larger piece is about 3 by 2 feet,
approximately.
And then you've series of small pieces about a foot by 10 inches.
Yeah.
Do you want to, like, what's your overall, like, what, how would you say it's something I listen to the show, the radio, and they mightn't get a chance to come in, or maybe you might encourage them by talking to them to come in, like, what would your overview be? There's one thing I was actually interested in your blog, you said something, seeing the importance of juxtaposition of colour, and how you like the changes of how things looked through diffused stained glass and then water. Is that, like, relevant to other work, or to this work here today?
It's just to other work, yeah. A few years ago, I did some work to do with... I went to Ely Cathedral. It's in Cambridgeshire, a big, beautiful cathedral. And they've got medieval stained glass in there. And the day I went, it was a particularly sunny day, and the light was diffused through the windows onto pillars and inside the cathedral itself, you know, and I did took loads of photos again and worked from those on big canvases. And yeah, that's I really enjoyed working on those, you know, and mixing colours and juxtaposing colours. And so the idea of diffused light is quite
important.
So
that's what you try to aim for maybe in the skies and stuff. And this, will we go into the other room for a split second and talk as a walk? Okay, because yeah, this I would say the work in this room is probably brighter.
I think it is, yeah. Most of these were, like I say, last summer I was over here in the heat wave, and it was a particular light, especially late afternoon, early evening. Kirkpatrick, you know,
so it's like
you
those,
get the sunset, you know,
yeah,
from the
those light blues and mauves and pinks, that
yeah,
kind of.
That's right, yeah, yeah. That's what I was trying to get. And
but some of them, would I say, do I see five that nearly would be the same compositionally, but have changed their. It's you've changed the light and the colour,
yeah,
but the composition would be the same pretty much. Would that be
more or less? Yeah, but it was the foreground that kind of took on a more important aspect of the painting, you know, because it changed very much from where I was painting from. You know, it's a lot of fields and a few trees and things, but that kind of
it's kind of like flat area. Well, you've painted quite flatly, but would be, I suppose, when you have a mountain in the background, you're trying to see the base. It's like a base and almost like a flat in the foreground.
Yeah, that's sometimes. Right. Yeah. I was trying to get the distance, you know, from where I was to, and sometimes I noticed that working from photographs, you know, because the photos I took, it was just a digital camera, but the mountain seemed a lot further away from these photographs, you know, and coming back now. I realised, you know, that was really to do with the camera, but you know, it was good. Yeah, it was good to work from those, really. But yeah, I've always found Claude Monet to be a big. I've always looked at his work and really loved it, especially his later work. But I like the ones, like the series paintings that he did. He did ones of. The cathedral in Paris and
I know those ones. Yes,
like
yes,
that.
Yes.
And the way the colour changes, and you know the light changes, and you know I think he was just an absolute master at capturing that. And that's what, in a way, I was trying to do with, especially with those three, because I was trying to.
The three being the truth, necessarily with the rig from like morning till evening.
Yeah, I was trying to get something of the change, you know, the change in the foreground, the change in the sky, the clouds, and the, you know, and the shadows and things on the mountain itself. So, yeah, that's what. And with the smaller ones as well in the corner, I was, you know, they were from right from daybreak to sunset. So.
Bomb! Just